facing blistering criticism for its role in eroding the news industry, Facebook announced it will invest $300 million in helping revive it. Some of the money will go directly to nonprofits, while the rest will go toward funding reporting grants for local newsrooms and a project to help publishers turn readers into paying subscribers.
Automakers around the world are spending more than $300 billion on electric vehicles over the next decade as they face rising regulatory requirements from China, the European Union, and North America. And it's not just full electric vehicles. Auto companies are still investing significant resources in hybrid vehicles.
When I created the World Economic Forum in 1971, people were very concerned with all aspects of life. If I look now, nearly 50 years later, just one simple fact, life expectancy on a global level since 71 has nearly grown by 20 years.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's January 21st, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for being with us again this morning for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day and another business week getting underway. That is, if you have work today. It's a Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, so a lot of folks are off today. Even the markets are closed. The U.S. markets are closed. But we're here, and we put together a really good broadcast for you today in line with Martin Luther King Day. We're going to have a conversation about financial justice. And a little bit later on, Adam Jones will be in from Huge to talk about 5G. 5G is coming. And he will give us a little preview of it and what to expect. Adam will be here at 5:40 this morning, so stay tuned for that. First, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, markets in Europe are open this morning. The FTSE is off by just about a quarter. The DAX and the CAC are lower as well. And in Asia, markets are generally higher this morning, with the Nikkei up nearly a quarter percent and the Hang Seng up just about a third. The Shanghai is up more than a half a percent. Again, markets in the United States are closed. Oil at $53.65 a barrel. A couple of stories that we're watching for you this morning. Consumer sentiment hitting its lowest level since President Trump's election. The University of Michigan's January reading on consumer attitudes fell sharply due to uncertainty over a host of issues. The survey noted the partial government shutdown, the trade dispute with China, and turmoil in the financial markets as a top concern for many Americans. The iPhone SE is back in the Apple online store. The phone, which is smaller than the standard model, runs between $249 and $299. They popped up Saturday and were already listed as out of stock by yesterday. Let's start this morning with financial justice. Joe Holberg is here. He's the founder and CEO of Holberg Financial. Joe, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me.
We wanted to have you in today because on Martin Luther King Day, we wanted to put the focus on social justice, financial justice, and you're perfect to talk about that. I know you've written about it. You've had some TED Talks. I want to tell people first what you do and where you do it at.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, to even be mentioned or thought of in the same sentence as MLK is an honor. So thank you for having me on. So Holberg Financial, at the high level, is a new benefit that companies can offer to their employees. And what makes us different as we help people build their financial health is that our platform is 100% free and unbiased for employees, since their companies are paying for it and offering it as a benefit, much like they would healthcare or dental or vision. And we think it's just as important.
And how is it different from, you know, at our company, we get a 401k, we get insurance, health insurance. How is it different from that?
Yeah, I think we're different in a couple of ways, but one of the big things with a 401k is, like, 401ks are awesome, and we sit right alongside of, and we actually complement 401ks, and the reason is twofold. One, people have a lot of specific questions about their 401ks, and they're not finding that the support offered internally is always suited to their needs, and so we can sort of step in and give some guidance on that to help them understand their 401k better, but also we are a very holistic financial health platform. And so you can't call up your 401k provider and get help in understanding how to save for and plan for a house or what it means when you have a kid and like how do you save for college. And so we can address the entire financial spectrum to support people in a holistic way as we're helping them build their financial health.
I'm just imagining it, and I'm smiling here because I just imagine calling my 401k provider, the place that services it, they'd probably laugh at me if I asked some of those questions.
Well, they may laugh, and I have heard of people getting laughed at before, and it's not inconceivable. But the thing is, they are trained to only comment on 401ks, and they're staying in their lane, right? I mean, these are giant companies, Fidelity and Vanguard, Charles Schwab, and it's totally fine. They provide a ton of value, but people have bigger needs that extend beyond that. And that's where we can come in and complement existing benefits really well to help people understand everything going on in their financial life.
How would you rate the status of people's financial intelligence?
Yeah, it's tough. In the U.S., there's survey after survey that shows, you know, people lack the understanding even around basic concepts like interest rate and compounding interest. And so I think what we're seeing is a reflection of not people's intelligence per se, but the lack of attention that we give to helping people learn about personal finances throughout their life, whether it's middle school or high school, or for people that go to college. You're graduating college and high school, you're an adult, and you've never once been taught anything about credit cards or savings accounts. And a lot of people just stumble around blindly for years or decades of their life, and they end up in a pretty bad situation where you and I were talking right before the show. The average American's got less than $1,000 in savings. You can barely replace tires on your car, let alone retire, right?
Yeah, and you know, I think there's some schools, and I know when I was in high school, there was a class that was part of maybe like part of a home ec class where we learned how to keep a checkbook and balance a checkbook. Nothing about investing or 401ks or the credit cards that would be offered as soon as we got to college or student loan debt or any of that stuff. Is it something that needs to be ingrained in the curriculum of schools where this is a mandatory study area?
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. I would say if we were to build the most knowledge and capacity for the United States, we would make sure that when people are going through our public education system, that they are getting exposed to financial concepts. However, as ideal of a solution as that is, I think it's very challenging to disrupt the curriculum that's promoted in the United States. Like, we're not going to flip out biology for personal finances, and both are super valuable. And so I think positionally what we're saying is we can't solve this ideally, but practically what we can do is we can build a really awesome software that starts to meet people's needs as they're entering the workforce and getting exposed to a paycheck. And they now have student loans. They're trying to buy a house or maybe refinance and get a different loan for another car. There's a ton of needs in adulthood, whether in your 20s, 30s, or 40s. And that's where we can really pick up and say, like, let's just knock out some goals right now so you can improve your financial health.
Well, and that's a good segue to financial justice, because you have to have the financial health, you have to have the financial knowledge to even begin considering financial justice, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, financial justice is a concept that I really came up with to encapsulate the specific notion that we're grappling with, which is this individual actor, right? People, and then their relationship to society, which is essentially like there are things we can do individually to improve our lives, but we also have to realize that there are systemic things in our culture and in our society that limit people's ability to reach their financial goals, and therefore they're experiencing financial injustice. And we have opportunities to address that as a country and also as a company.
We're not talking about, just to make it clear here, we want to keep capitalism alive and well. We're not talking about necessarily socialism, are we? We're just talking about making sure everybody has the ability to become financially stable.
Right. And I actually wrote that as in the first part of the book that I wrote. I said, I love capitalism. Like, we built the world's largest economy, and we've had the largest economy for over a century. And in large part, it's because of, you know, democratic institutions and capitalism. And so this is not a socialism proclamation by any stretch of the imagination. We're just saying, let's be more educated and have more financial justice so that people have a better opportunity to reach their financial goals and dreams. People shouldn't be held back because of external forces that are beyond their control. The wage gap is a great example. There's no reason women should make less systematically than men do. That just doesn't make sense. It's a bad allocation of resources that is arbitrarily assigned to gender. It just doesn't make sense.
Does that also apply to, and I know we hear it a lot, the 1%? The 1% making so much more than the rest of society. This report last year of the CEOs that were making 100, 200, 300 times more than the line workers in their company. Talk to us a little bit about that part of it.
Sure. I think it's inherently challenging to take a broad view of extreme wealth, the Jeff Bezos of the world, right? He recently is getting divorced and his wife is getting $30 billion plus dollars and he still has an empire. I think the reality is without those high paid CEOs, we would not have the ability to create these massively valuable companies that create tens of thousands of jobs. So even before we start, you know, eviscerating people that are making tons of money, we have to realize that they've created hundreds of thousands and millions of jobs. And so I think that's a very balanced viewpoint. And then you can get into the minutia of like what tax rate should they pay, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the broad response is, do people have the opportunity to reach their financial goals? If so, it's a financially just society. If not, then we should really think about how we can improve that. And so whether or not that deals with the top 1% or gender or race or, you know, geographic disbursement, we have to take a critical look at everything, in my opinion.
You talked about the financial health. You talked about maybe leveling the playing field in terms of wages. What are some of the other things that need to be done to make it easier for people to achieve their goals?
Yeah, I think information is one of them, right? I mean, like the internet has every single conceivable piece of information on it. But what I always say is, just because you can get onto WebMD, it doesn't mean we're going to read up on the internet and become doctors. It's the same thing for finances. It's not like you just magically wake up and spend 40 hours reading about personal finances and become financially healthy or aware enough to execute on a complex strategy. And so information and getting it to people that have traditionally not had the opportunity to get good financial guidance and support, that's number one in terms of us moving the needle on this concept of financial justice. Another interesting one that I think is subtly lurking beneath the surface is this idea of expense equality versus everyone is very well-versed in wage equality, right? Women get paid less than men. Minorities are getting paid less than non-minorities, and et cetera. But there's this expense inequality where women actually have to spend more money in their professional lives and in their personal lives than men do. And the prototypical example is like tampons. And I did the math on it, and it came out to something outrageous. Like, over the course of a woman's life, she'll spend $60,000 on tampons, which is outrageous. Like, that's a massive amount of wealth that's going out of the pockets of women, whereas men don't have to face that equivalent sort of hygiene cost.
Yeah, and I've often heard people quip about that. They would say, if men had to use those, the price of them would probably be a lot lower.
I think, yeah, by sheer economics, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the notion that worrying about your finances is also causing health problems. Mm-hmm. We had a report recently from the American Heart Association that people are dropping dead because of wage inequality, worrying about getting paid and paying their bills. Mm-hmm. So solving that problem might also solve a health problem.
I agree with that hypothesis, and certainly the research that's coming out to support it. Even if there aren't direct health issues, what we do know is 76% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. 85% of Americans are financially stressed. And then that has a whole cascade of secondary consequences, including health. And our big thing is when you're financially stressed, you're distracted at work, you're less productive, you're less engaged, and you end up trying to find another job, which drops retention for employers more quickly than if you have a financially healthy and less stressed workforce. And insofar as our early data shows that we're actually helping people lower their financial stress by 64%. And if we could help somebody avoid a heart attack, we'll be in business forever. But what we do know is we're actually helping people feel more productive and engaged at work, which helps the employee and the employers.
Yeah, we've had a guest recently describe this as presenteeism, mm-hmm. where somebody shows up for work and they may be sitting in their desk and doing their work, but mm-hmm. their mind is somewhere else and they're not fully engaged at work.
That's a great term. And we actually, we survey our employees and we find that the average employee is experiencing presenteeism with their finances 7.3 times per week.
Wow.
And even if that's 5 minutes, you're off task or less engaged for hours of your week, which means you're not doing whatever it is you presumably want to do or quote unquote should be doing based on, your role.
So there's the idea that the evidence really that this is costing business.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't there more being done in this area?
I think it's the same reason why there's so much cost expended on treatment for health issues versus spending money on proactive health measures, right? Healthy eating habits, going to the gym or even walking or exercising. It's the same thing with financial health. It's like when you're broke and you've got credit card debt and you can't pay your bills, you're going to go find a solution. But by then, you're already 5-10 years down the road, whereas the balanced, moderate, sort of proactive approach would be like, hey, let's make a couple extra payments to get rid of the credit card debt. Let's save $100 a month instead of $50 into our emergency savings. If you think about that $1,000 statistic, if you save $100 a month, it only takes you 10 months to build up $1,000 in emergency savings. If everyone just started saving $100 or even $50, we could solve the emergency savings crisis in America in 10 to 20 months.
Yeah. Saving is a foreign concept to a lot of people, though. Mm-hmm. I know we've done had guest after guest come in and say that people are just so adverse to saving money for whatever reason. That mindset needs to change in America, doesn't it?
Sure. And I think one of the reasons it's so difficult to save is we are hardwired to consume. Right? All the way back into our hunter-gatherer days. And we need to consume now because we're not sure about the future, right? And I think the economy has moved so quickly, and so has human history, where we're still hardwired to spend money versus saving it. And so you really have to tap into this like really rational component of your brain in order to realize why savings is important, and we're not hardwired to do so. And Daniel Kahneman, who wrote Thinking Fast and Slow, it's an excellent book, and he won Nobel Prize for his economic research. And I think he really is sort of the grandfather of this line of thinking around why it's so easy to consume versus save, along with other topics.
Yeah. You mentioned the credit card debt. Student loan debt is another big deal. Mm-hmm. And I know that one of the partners you have is Peanut Butter. And we've had David Aronson on before, mm-hmm. the CEO and founder of that company, a work benefit that helps people pay their student loans. Give us a sense of that part of this equation.
Yeah, it's a massive component, and you know, David's office and our office is actually about 25 feet apart, and so we're constantly talking about the student loan crisis, which is over $1 trillion in student loan debt. It's larger of a debt holding from the American population than credit cards, and it's surpassed it recently. And the Federal Reserve has been tracking a lot of this for a number of years, and it's great data. The big thing that just is so irksome, and why peanut butter has an opportunity to really help with that, as do we more holistically, is if you look at a 22-year-old that's popping out of college, they've got two choices in this sort of dichotomous world. They can either save up and buy a house and stimulate the economy, or they can service their student loan debt. And with so much servicing of student loan debt, we're literally putting the brakes on our economy. And so the sooner we get a handle on that, the faster we can grow our economy, which benefits everyone, student loan holders and not student loan holders the same.
Well, if Martin Luther King Jr. were alive today, do you think that, I know he preached a lot and worked a lot on social justice issues. Do you think financial justice would be in there as well if he were alive today?
Yeah, I think he would see the natural linkage between the two. I think financial justice is a subset of social justice. And you see the you see instances like the boycotts, where there was a very clear understanding of the linkage between economic power and social power. And so when we're looking out at all of these institutions that are doing predatory lending or charging 15, 20, 25% interest rate, if you come up with this very basic idea of like, how can I start to enact some of my own financial justice in my life, maybe you stop spending on a credit card as much, and now you're paying the company less and you're able to retain more of it. And that's a form of enacting your own strategy to better your personal life, but then on an aggregate scale, you're just shifting the power back from, you know, one company to an individual or a group of individuals. So I think he'd look at it and say, this makes total sense.
The action plan, let's say you're listening and you're a person that wants financial justice in their life, but is it an employer that doesn't have it? Is a good economy now that we're in, is now the time to go out and find it for yourself?
Yeah, I think there's a ton of opportunities as the economy itself is strong for individuals to capitalize on that. So credit is more accessible. Savings might be easier to build because you got a recent promotion rather than wage stagnation. There's a lot of individual opportunity for people to capitalize on a strong economy in terms of building their own financial health. There's also some drawbacks, right? It's like when the economy is good, housing prices go up. And so you're like, oh man, if I just could have bought a home 8 months ago before interest rates went up, I would have won a small battle versus, you know, getting a higher interest rate. And so, you know, everything comes with these pros and cons, both individually and at large. And so I think the moral of the story is it takes an entire lifetime to build a very financially healthy life. And so the time that you have to do it is now, regardless if it's a recession or a boom, regardless if your employer offers a benefit like ours or not, you just have to take some measure of personal control to start to move forward.
How did you get involved in all of this? What's your background, and where did you come from with these ideas? Were you thinking about this all of your life, these ideas?
Inadvertently, yeah. I grew up in rural Michigan, and my joke is that my hometown had half as many people as the Merchandise Mart has people walking in and out of their doors every day. It's 5,000 people, very small, lots of corn everywhere. And essentially, my parents worked extremely hard. My dad had a small business, you know, one or two employees maybe at max. But we were always on sort of the knife's edge or the razor's edge in terms of, you know, do we put food on the table or not? And by the time I got to applying to college, I actually had to borrow $40 from a neighbor to apply to Michigan. Wow. And I was like, if I don't have $40, where am I going to get the next $40,000? By the time I got to my senior year, I actually ran out of money. I slept in my car instead of dropping out. And then Obama came and was our commencement speaker. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, I just had, you know, graduated from college. Didn't expect to do that, but I'm glad. And then I got into the working world and I taught on the west side of Chicago and then worked at Google. And what I realized was everyone had the same questions. It didn't matter if you had a GED or a high school degree or a PhD and you were at Google. You still wanted to know what an IRA was and if you should use it. You still wanted to buy a house and didn't know how. On and on down the list. And I was like, this is crazy. No one knows anything about personal finances. Let's go solve that. So I quit my job and started this company, and here we are.
And what's the future hold for Holberg Financial?
I think my goal for Holberg Financial is to give everyone in America access to our platform so that they can work towards their financial goals. And to that end, we are growing extremely rapidly. Companies are coming out of the woodworks and they're saying, this is what we've been looking for. We want to give our employees something that benefits them, but we want to do so in a way where we know that they're getting the best advice and guidance, and they're not just on your platform getting sold the next insurance contract or being passed to the highest bidder to open up a credit card. We want to actually help them answer their questions rather than just funnel them to the next level of product and services.
Well, we wish you and Holberg Financial all of the best. Come back and see us sometime. And thanks for coming in and spending Martin Luther King Day with us.
I certainly will. And thanks for having me.
Joe Holberg is the founder and CEO of Holberg Financial. You can find more online at holbergfinancial.com. We're going to continue our conversation after the bell this morning and post more in the podcast of the opening bell a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of the opening bell. 5G is coming sooner than you think, probably. And that means an explosion of connected devices such as mobile phones, television, security systems, speakers. All of those, among others, is only going to intensify. We want to have a conversation about this morning. Adam Jones is Director of Technology at Huge and is joining us, friend of the program, back with us. Adam, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You've been working sort of very closely with this. You know more than a lot of folks about where we're at and the status of things. Let's begin at the beginning. What is 5G and how big is it going to be for all of us?
So 5G is a little bit more than you think. A lot of people just think, you know, 4G, fourth generation, and then this would be 4G plus one. It's actually not. This is actually probably going to usher in what most consider the fourth industrial revolution. So you're looking at, we're opening the bandwidth in a way where connected devices and cars, security systems, retail are all going to be operating with lower latency and faster speeds, where it's going to be quicker to interact with 5G than it would be to interact with a human. You know, a human's reaction time is anywhere between 100 to 200 milliseconds, and they're going to bring 5G down to 1 millisecond. To put that in perspective, we were talking earlier, you know, it would be like streaming 800 4K shows all at one time on one device with no latency and no lag. So it's not that the fifth generation is just an improvement on the 4G landscape that we lived in. We've actually changed the paradigm, and then 5G is actually changing the way businesses need to operate, businesses need to think, and also giving that user the ultimate control of what they want to do, where they want to be, and they have control over the channel, the marketing channel that they live inside of.
Before we go any further, I want to tell people what you do at Huge and what Huge is. Talk to us about what your job there is.
Yeah, so technology director at Huge. I'm in charge of all of the technology facets inside of Chicago on our accounts in Chicago. I'm in charge of not only software management and software building and design, but also strategy, thinking about how we can improve our daily lives and improve brand strategy around using technology in the most appropriate ways and, you know, ushering that in for our customers.
You work with some of the biggest brands around.
Yes.
You can't tell us what they are because you would have to kill us afterwards, or
sure. Huge is a full service agency, so you know it's more a focus, and our focus really solely is around the users and how users are in the center of all the problems, right? And then users need the right solutions for the problem. So, you know, one of the great things we can talk about is Zelle, right? You know, end to end, we worked on Zelle from the brand to developing the application to even thinking of the name and how the commercials will be and all that stuff. So, you know, we can do anything like that. It's basically, we're looking to partner with people or organizations that are in the middle of transformation or in the middle of taking it to the next step. And kind of like we were talking about, interrogating their business or interrogating what they're doing today and trying to improve till to tomorrow. Anybody can go to any, you know, third party and say like, oh, I want this to be built, or I want to do that. But we're really looking for strategic partnerships and to get in with individuals that are looking to transform the way they're thinking and the way they're doing things. A lot like why we started, you know, investigating 5G. And, you know, release the white paper on hugeinc.com/5G.
And it's called Unboxing 5G, the Next Retail Breakthrough. I want to get into some of that here in a second because it is good reading. But first, back to the 5G, just a general question about 5G. I've seen a lot of people say, well, 2020 is going to be the unrolling year. Mm-hmm. Who's going to see this first? Are we going to see this on our mobile phones first? Or is it going to be behind the scenes in some of these companies that you're talking about? Where will we see 5G first?
Well, right now we're seeing it. You know, there are different companies that are opening different labs to have people come in and experiment. Verizon is one of those companies that is doing this. You're seeing it get it rolled out to cities, and people are using, you know, a version of 5G in the home or in an office. So what I think what you'll see is, almost by geolocation and by you know, proxy, you know, will it go mobile? Probably, but will we see it first in the home and in business? That's a little bit more stable and it's a little bit more manageable because it's not on the move. Because of, without getting too in the weeds and nerdy about you know, gigahertz, megahertz, and millimeter and centimeter bandwidths of the actual the G. Being stable and being and not moving is going to be more helpful for us to gauge the 5G and be able to ramp up and down, like different things that need to go on in the back end to make sure it's working. When you're moving around mobily, you know, there are some limitations with getting behind barriers and things like that. That's why when I was talking about the industrial revolution, the fourth generation of it, mm-hmm. you're going to have new repeaters and new towers going up. Our phones are going to change diametrically. It's thinner. Mm-hmm. The processing power is going to live in the cloud. You know, things are going to change and a lot of jobs are going to come with that, which is great. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like where we're heading. And I would say if you'll see a lot of it more in businesses first or in homes first, and then over time you will see it in the mobile.
And the retail part of this is very cool. The idea that, a retailer is already preparing for this is probably pretty smart, given what 5G will enable them to do. The one conversation we could have is about, you know, you go into, let's say, a hardware chain, mm-hmm. and everything's connected to the point that it knows, you know, who you are when you walk up to something on the aisle,
right?
Can help you find the exact price, can help you find the exact thing in a store, maybe even send somebody over to help you. All of these things happening in the speed of light as well.
Right. So, I mean, you know, great example. You go into a store, you're walking down an aisle. Maybe you didn't know you needed help, but they, you know, the camera's there. They're looking at, they're, you know, you're being monitored, not in a bad way, but, you know, at a 4K rate where someone can see that. And with sentiment analysis, like, oh, this person's upset, they're lost, they can't find a certain thing, then that sends that fires off a real-time message to someone to go address the problem. And then now maybe that problem was the item wasn't there. Well, then you can do real-time view into your data to see, like, well, why didn't this robot or this human move item X over to aisle Y and put it on the shelf. And now in real time, you're making changes to your store around the user. You're making changes to the store around your inventory. And now you're using all of these connected experiences for your business to get that item to the shelf so that person's not upset. Now, if that person's not upset or that person actually had a great experience, being that user in the center of the problem and that channel, they're going to, that creates the loyalty end of this. And so, you know, understanding how inventory is working, how things are coming off the truck, how they're getting to the shelf, you could reconfigure your store in real time based on the traffic for that day. Mm-hmm. Maybe you put together the a bad solution for your Black Friday, and you can look at all the traffic coming in and out and what's happening in the aisles, and you could see the stockpile in one area, you know, not moving. You could move those items to a different part of your store because you're getting that real-time analysis, and it's getting, and it's getting it to you in 1 millisecond over a network that is working really fast for you. And you know, it's actually like it's almost becoming a new version of security for the store for them to ensure that they're, you know, making the right move for the user.
You, before we came on the air, we were talking a little bit about this, and you had a really good analogy that I think people will understand listening to this radio station. It's sort of like AM and FM.
Right.
And this would be the FM coming.
Correct.
Right?
Yes, yeah. It is the FM. You know, you can listen to this show way further out
right.
as you're driving. Versus the FM, but you know, the clarity and what people want out of FM is a little different. You know, 4G is not going anywhere, but 5G is that FM. You know, AM didn't go anywhere, so it's not like it's much is going to change. It's just going to give that user and the businesses the opportunity to, you know, to operate quicker, faster, and get to the place that, you know, as we were talking about before this, get to the Jetsons, right? Get to that level where things are happening in real time for me and there's no lag. So if I could be in a store wearing like a Blackhawks jersey, walk by a really smart kind of window pane looking thing, then all of a sudden I could get an ad with Kane or Taze right there. Like it magically happened. It looks like a hologram. Like that stuff is real. It really can read who you are, see the clothes you're wearing, or maybe the, you know, the way you're feeling. You could direct advertisement towards that. Like if someone looks like they're a little down, you know, give them a smile.
Yeah, you said something earlier that I want to go back to sentiment
analysis. Yeah.
So it's the idea that the camera that's watching you connected to the 5G knows how what you're feeling.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of things that you can do when you have real time data that's getting sent to the cloud and getting sent to, you know, the edge computing, where you are replacing some of the thought processing that's on the human, and you're allowing the machine learning or the AI, the artificial intelligence, to give you information about what's happening inside your store. So it's like I said, it's like another layer of security for your business. In a sense, also not like security in a way where you think of locking your door, but security in a way, I'm managing my customers, I'm managing my situation, I'm managing the way people are interacting with my world and with my, you know, establishment.
Is 5G going to be big for the Internet of Things retailers that sell that sort of stuff? Because I would imagine this is going to take all of that to the next level as
it
well.
It will. What's cool about 5G is it's actually going to drive the price of, and which is already happening with a lot of Internet of Things. It's going to drive the price of the of a lot of this equipment down, which is great. And you know, the Internet of Things is awesome. We all understand Internet of Things when we look at connected homes, and you know, all the talking about car fleets and everything like that. It's going to actually give us a little bit of, you know, a sigh of relief finally that like all of these connected devices and all these connected features on the hardware, like a connected refrigerator or a car, are actually operating quicker than we could imagine, and not worried about the latency inside of that. And I think that that's what gave people a lot of pause initially. And it was, you know, a lot of people are building really great Internet of Things products, but what this will do now is it wipes away any type of like, well, I don't want to interact with that yet because it doesn't feel ready. It's not as quick as I would imagine. It feels, you know, kind of, there was too much like latency in it. It didn't feel real. Now it's going to take away all of that, and it's going to offer like the speed and the realness that people are expecting, you know.
The rollout of this is going to be, what are we talking about in terms of infrastructure? You mentioned that there'll have to be new, transmitters, new kinds of, antennas and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How much are we talking here? How much are we going to have to pay for all of this?
I don't know how much we'll have to pay, but it's going to be, I don't know how much the consumer itself is going to pay, but I do know that phone prices will go down because you won't need nearly the amount of processing power inside of the phone. I'm sure that, you know, cities and governments will be interested in, you know, upgrading so that people are connected and happy. I feel that, you know, depending on how it gets rolled out and who gets a hold of it first, that's going to determine pricing. But I do know that ultimately with anything like this, pricing for the consumer does go down because of the fact that, you know, we're connected, we're purchasing, you know, bodies are inside stores, mm-hmm. getting what they need and doing what they want. People are interacting with the city and doing things like that. I think that the price goes down, but that's still to be determined.
Right. The autonomous future is sort of relies on this. Every futurist that you talk to will say, whether it's an autonomous retail environment, robots in stores or what have you, drones, to autonomous vehicles on the streets, it all requires 5G.
Yeah, because if a human driving down the road right now has between 100 to 200 milliseconds of reaction time, if you think about a connected fleet going down the street that can actually talk to one another or react to each other within 1 millisecond, you know, that's almost safer than driving down the road with, you know, your average human right next to you. But again, that's a lot harder than solving some of the retail problems, but you're right. Like the future, the autonomous future, it relies on the speed and efficiency of, you know, how we're doing our computations in the cloud and how we're reacting to our phones or to experiences in real time and how that feedback loop is sent back to us. And that is going to ensure like basically the future.
It's going to be pretty exciting. If you had to guess when we might start to see the beginnings of this, what would you say, next year, a couple of years?
I mean, you're seeing it now because, you know, we even went in and did a we did some work at the Verizon 5G location in New York, and we were able to showcase some of the things you can do with 5G and what you can do inside of retail. That's where a lot of the information that you see in the paper comes from. So you're seeing it now. People are interrogating their businesses now. People are investing a lot of money. I mean, T-Mobile is hiring up for this. If you look at the news, you see more and more people at the executive level getting put in positions to usher this in. So you're gonna see a lot of research and a lot of, like I said, interrogating of the business and interrogating of the actual needs. Now people are going to be focusing and investing in it now, and you know, folks like Huge, we're going to be focusing on what can the user get from this, how can we improve the business with this technology now, and then you're going to see a lot of like early day kind of research, and you'll see like maybe some things trickle out, and you know, there'll be probably some different things set up as soon as 5G hits certain areas. You'll probably be able to go in and see like showcase or showrooms of the future.
Well, Adam, it's great seeing you again and having this conversation. Folks can find you at hugeinc.com.
Correct.
And we're going to link out to this white paper because it's pretty cool to read.
Yep.
And come back and see us sometime.
Thank you.
All right. Adam Jones, the director of technology at Huge. And we, again, we'll post the link to the white paper and more about Adam in the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com.
720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, again, markets, U.S. markets closed for the Martin Luther King holiday. Markets in Europe are generally lower, and markets in Asia this morning generally higher. The Hang Seng up nearly a third this morning. The Shanghai up nearly 0.5%. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Monday, January 21st, again, financial markets closed today. No government reports due out, but it will be a busy week of earnings and other reports coming your way starting tomorrow. We will this week get a look at existing home sales, mortgage applications, and jobless claims a little bit later in the week, new home sales on Friday. just some of the things that could move the markets on this January the 21st.